Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. It's the beer show on Vox Pop today. We have a great panel in the studio with us. The number to call if you want to get in line and get your question in, it's 1-800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Let's meet the panel. George DePiro is the co-owner and head brewer at Druthers in Saratoga Springs, New York. Roger Savoy is owner of Homebrew Emporium in Rensselaer, New York, and Cambridge, West Boylston, and South Weymouth, Massachusetts. My gosh, you're a magnate already.
There's another one just opening.
Where's that?
New Rochelle.
I'll be darned. Wow. And also, we are welcomed today by a new voice on the show. Andrew Mankin is head brewer and co-owner of Barrington Brewery in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. And the number to call, once again, 1-800-348-2551 if you have a brewing or beer question. Well, gentlemen, welcome back to the show. It's been a while.
Far too long, yes.
Nice to have you here. Now, we heard some complaining. I won't sugarcoat it here before the program in Studio A. There's been some complaining about the government shutdown. And, you know, you can kind of go through these first couple of weeks and many people aren't affected by it. But you guys have already seen some problems.
Yeah, well, on the media, mostly you hear about national parks being closed.
Yeah.
And, okay, yeah, that's, you have to rearrange your vacation. And that is certainly a drag. But then you heard about, you know, cancer studies being shut down, and that's really bad. And the TTB is closed. The TTB is an acronym that means Alcohol Tax and Trade Bureau. Mm-hmm. And it's who is in charge of breweries in our country. And
wineries and distilleries.
Right, all of it. And so if you are trying to build a brewery right now and you have a permit there, it's in limbo. If you have a label approval waiting, it's in limbo. So you're not going to build your brewery. You're not going to
hire people out
the new beer.
Yeah.
And you're paying your bills all this time.
Yeah, you said yesterday you couldn't pay your taxes.
Pay.gov was down. I saw just before the show it's up again.
Okay.
So when I get home, I'll try to pay my
my
brewery taxes. But yeah, the other day I couldn't.
So to be clear, you guys stay in business.
I'm in the fortunate position of not waiting on any
approvals
right now.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm not looking for label approval. I've got my brewer's permit. I'm okay. Mm, but right. There's a lot of people out there who aren't. And
I have
that's
three
not
or four
cool.
customers who are in the process of trying to open a place, and 10 days, nothing's happening. So it costs some money, you know, while you're waiting.
Yeah.
Know, every day.
Absolutely. All right. Well, what's new in the world of beer? What haven't I learned aside from the fact that Beck's Sapphire is underwhelming?
Well, there's a lot of new breweries opening up out there
in
our area, all over Northeast and probably the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I turn around, somebody's telling me about a new brewery that's going to open, or people have plans.
Sure.
And there's huge interest in microbrewery beer right now.
And it hasn't stopped. It's been 20 years now?
Close to
30.
Yeah. We opened in 1995 at the Barrington Brewery, and it was very popular. There was a really big surge of microbreweries opening up, and then it kind of leveled off a little bit, and it slowed down, and now there's just an even bigger surge.
How many are there, you know, commercial microbreweries in this country?
The largest amount in the last 100 years. I believe it's about 2,500 breweries right now.
Mm, wow.
And I believe that the number is an additional 200 or 300 or 400 that are in the wings waiting to open again.
Many of these are very, very small.
Okay, now how small?
So-called nano breweries.
Some of them one barrel, you know, which that's 31 gallons.
It's two
kegs. No. In other words,
per batch.
And how many batches? In other words,
well, they can make as many as they can.
Right, but then, at that level, at the 1 to 4 barrel level, you can't make any money off of it.
But they're not doing it.
It's a hobby.
Yeah.
But you still need to be commercially licensed.
You still need to be licensed and stuff like that. Yeah. But that's the small end. But most of them are more like a 5 to 10 barrel system.
I've mentioned this before, but back before the microbrewery, maybe just at the very beginning of the revolution, if you will, back in the 80s around here, we had this guy Bill Newman. And he had Newman's Brewery, and we used to go down,
yeah,
you know, Manan's
that.
Way,
sure.
And he would fill up beer balls, and he'd had kegs, and he had really a terrific winter ale, I recall.
Sure. Yeah, and he had several, very good
beer. An amber, yeah. And I've got two of his T-shirts still.
I think I have a couple of mugs. What happens is you have a couple beers, the mug breaks. But I think I actually have one somewhere on a shelf. All right, so the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Mm. Before we get to the phones, let's taste something here. George, what do we have here?
This is my Oktoberfest lager. That you know, it's that time of year.
It is.
In Germany, it's a little past, but you know, we're in America. We can do what we want.
So you have it in actually in October.
In October, all rather right. than September. And this is a traditionally made Oktoberfest. If you went to Munich a couple of weeks ago, you would have gotten a very pale colored beer.
Yeah.
That was would really just be like a Munich Helles lager on steroids. It would be a little bit stronger, a little bit maltier. But in the old days, they made it amber in color out of Munich malt and significantly stronger than a normal lager. So this is like 6.6%.
Now this reminds me of the color of, say, back in the day of, say, a spot in Oktoberfest. Mm-hmm. Has it changed?
Yeah, the stuff they serve on draft in the tents has. But this is more correctly called Märzenbier.
Okay.
März is the German word for March. So in the old days it was brewed in March and then aged over the summer and served at the big party in September, but now they serve weaker stuff.
Well, that's delicious.
Thank you.
And what is the alcohol content in this?
About 6.5, 6.6, and a lot of Munich malt is what you're tasting in this beer.
It has an authentic taste. One German product that I can never seem to get my hands on around here anymore is the Maibock.
Mm.
And I can't find them in my beverage center anymore. I think
it's the wrong time of year right
now.
No,
not now. But right. I mean, when they come out in
spring,
April, or that's tremendous. And there was always scuttlebutt that it was the stuff they had in the bottom of the barrels. But that's not true.
No,
total myth.
That's by people who don't know anything about beer.
Right. There's nothing in the bottom of the barrel except more beer.
Hacker Shore made a great one. They probably still do. I just don't see it anymore. All right, let's go to the phones. 1-800-348-2551. George DePiro of Druthers in Saratoga Springs. Roger Savoy of Homebrew Emporium. And Andrew Menken, a newcomer here of the Barrington Brewery in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Jim in Saratoga Springs, you're on. Jim.
Hey, everybody. How you doing? Firstly, I just want to say this is a fantastic topic for the show, and I recommend that you do it monthly, if not more frequently.
I don't know if my liver can handle it. All right, we'll see.
Yeah, well, I'd be happy to step in your place for you for at least a show or two. So my question is, I've spent a lot of time in the Pacific Northwest, and I've seen an increasing trend for a lot of the breweries out there to have what they call a Cascadian dark ale. And I'm wondering, is that any different than a black IPA that I see popping up out east as well?
Not really. Black IPA is a terrible name, so I prefer. Because it's a black pale ale.
Oh, that's a good point.
it's completely contradictory. So calling it Cascadian dark ale shows A, more imagination, and B, you know, it's not got this silly
moniker on it.
Yeah. So
I mean, you can make anything you want. I mean, and this is a trend of making heavily hopped dark beers. It's definitely, some people really like them, other people it's a little bit of a clash in flavors. Mm-hmm.
That's also pulling the English into more hops too, because
right.
all of their stuff is hopping, ramping up too. It's kind of an interesting to see that the Pacific Northwest is kind of leading in changing a lot of ways things are done.
So the English brewing style traditionally heavier on malt and less on hops?
Correct.
Right, and the varieties of hops they use in Europe aren't as big and punchy as the modern American varieties. Mm-hmm. Our hops tend to have big citrus and floral notes.
Yeah.
And the European hops don't. So even if you use the same quantity, you're not going to get the same effect. And you know,
there was a hop shortage. Last time I did a show with you guys, I don't know, 6 months ago.
Oh, it still goes on. If you try to buy hops on a spot market right now, you won't get anything that you want. You have to contract way in advance,
right.
And it's absurd because at our level, when I say our, I mean my level, a small brew pub, I might need a few hundred pounds of something.
Yeah.
I have to contract for this 2 years in advance.
Yeah, we do too.
And it means I can't explore new varieties, because what I would have to do is contract for 11 pounds of it for next year, see if I like it, and then try to contract more of it the next year. That's just not going to happen. So Yeah, it's a bit of a drag, but you know, we're all getting by.
Maybe. Jim, I left you out. You have a follow-up?
Follow-up question. I'm sitting outside my local beverage center right now in Saratoga Springs. Any recommendations on what I should look for?
Not Beck's Sapphire. No, I'm kidding. The folks at Beck's Sapphire are doing a fine job. Just officially, I'll tell you that.
Fair enough.
Anybody?
Whatever you like, you know.
I'm from Massachusetts, so I go with
whatever is seems to be freshest. I like places that have or breweries that put born on dates, not expiration dates, because you can put any expiration date you want on it. It could be a 5-year expiration date, which is what's on Belgian beers.
Yeah.
So if you see a date brewed on or born on or whatever they say, well, try to get as close to that as you can, because very few beer styles are meant to be aged.
Thomas Hardy notwithstanding.
And how close to that is a good recommendation? Like within a few months? Or
I'd say
on alcohol?
Weeks
is ideal. Week. Yeah.
Okay. Jim, thanks a lot. We're going to take a break here, and we appreciate your call. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. George DePiro, Roger Savoy, and Andrew Menken all back with your beer questions and answers coming up.
Support comes from Kern Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York. Legal and consulting services on regulatory issues for life insurance and annuity manufacturers and distributors. KernCompliance.com. The Odyssey Bookshop, South Hadley, Massachusetts, presenting Denis Bichard, discussing Empty Hands, Open Arms, The Race to Save Bonobos in the Congo and Make Conservation Go Viral. Tonight at 7 p.m., odysseybks.com. And Paradise City Arts Festival, a 3-day festival of art, craft, music, and food, this weekend at the Three County Fairgrounds in Northampton, Massachusetts. ParadiseCityArts.com.
One 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's the beer show. We do it once in a blue moon. George DePiro is here, Roger Savoy, and Andrew Menken, all brewers and guys who know all about the subject. And we're about to taste another one here from Barrington Brewery. Andrew, why don't you tell us about this one?
This is a beer we have on tap right now. It's we have it every year at this time. We grow our own hops, and we use those hops in this beer. We call it our hop, kind of because it's our hops.
Right.
But it's an English-style bitter, so it's fairly light in alcohol. It's what you would consider a session beer. Mm-hmm.
What does a session beer mean?
A session beer is a fairly light beer, what they call in England at a pub, that you could drink several of them without getting too intoxicated.
Okay.
And this beer has, as I said, has our own hops that we grow. The two hop varieties are Nugget and Chinook. And what's interesting about doing this particular beer is that you never know from year to year how strong the hops are going to be or quite what flavor they are. And we've been doing this one for 18 years now. So we've got a pretty good idea what it's going to be.
And that keeps costs down? I mean, with the rising hop prices?
No. So we grow hops around the backside of the building, and then we have to pick them. And it's really a labor of love. And we grow enough hops to get about, maybe we get 8 to 10 pounds by the time they're dried. And and we probably use about 1,500 pounds of hops a year. So it's really, like I said, a labor of love. But it's fun to do this beer because it does have kind of a different flavor.
It sure does. It's delicious.
Than other things.
And we have a question here via the internet. Scott writes, I have some Molson Brador that was imported by a friend. It has been sitting around for a few years. Is it still any good? How would I know? Oh, you'll know.
You'll know. Open it and pour.
Wasn't that good to begin with?
No.
Are
they still in the brown bottles? The squat brown bottles?
I haven't seen Brador in a long time. Decades, yeah.
Yeah.
It would probably do well if you age it a few more years, I guess.
No. It starts off as a very light-tasting beer, and at this point, it's going to be so oxidized. It might smell kind of honey sweet, maybe have a slight sherry note to it, but when you taste it, it's going to taste like absolutely nothing.
Okay, club soda.
Yeah.
All right, very good. 1-800-348-2551. Back to the phones we go. Charlie and Beacon. Charlie, you're on.
Hi, guys. I just have a comment, and then I'll hang up and let you bounce it around.
Okay.
I was at a beer tasting festival down in Nyack a few weeks ago. Not too many brewers were present, but what my brother-in-law and I discovered is that we found more beers that we did not like than that we liked. And I said to him, well, just because you brew beer doesn't mean you're a beer brewer. And I just like you to I think, you know, we're getting oversaturated with guys who just think, well, I can set up a brewery and I'm all set and I can sell it. And there's an art to making beer and then especially good beer.
All right. All right. Well, we'll kick that one around. Thank you, Charlie. I appreciate it.
Actually, it's there's a science to making good beer more than there is an art. And I think that's where some of the issues come in. I mean, these days, I'd argue that American beer quality is pretty high.
Right.
It's 15 years ago at a beer festival, yeah, it was really easy to find some pretty questionable product. But most American brewers are doing a decent job now. But there's still a lack of education amongst many brewers. You'll see people with educations ranging from English degrees to philosophy degrees. And
that's okay, right? As long as you have the experience?
It's okay if you teach yourself the science or if you go to school for brewing and specifically learn the science. But if you don't, you're going to have all sorts of issues. There's a lot of stuff, especially at a brew pub, it's kind of easier because I know my beer is going to be kept in a cold, dark place right up until it's served, and the beers are never older than a few weeks old. If you're a packaging brewery, then you've got to put your beer in bottles. It's going out into the world where it's going to be kept warm, and it's going to, you know, all sorts of abuse is going to happen to it. So you have to know about what you're doing to make sure you're making shelf-stable product. So the beer could taste great if you get it from the brewery, but when you get it off the grocer shelf, it might not have made it.
Okay.
And that might not be the brewer's fault either. It could be the grocer's fault. And one other thing is, just because you don't like it doesn't mean it's not good beer. It just means you don't like it. It can still be good beer.
Well, yeah, there's a difference between hedonistic tasting and objective tasting. A hedonistic tasting is simply, I don't like this, or
yeah,
I do like this.
But that's, that's pretty good. That'll work for most people.
But it's not a good way to review beers online or anywhere because, like, here I have a beer called Goza. It's a little-known German style. It's sour.
Oh, beautiful.
Well, if you don't like sour beers, you're not going to like this.
Okay.
And that's fine to say you don't like it, but you can't say that's a bad beer. You have to say, it's the style I don't like.
Okay. One of the things I'm finding out there is that there is a lot of old beer out in the stores.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beer is supposed to be drinking fresh.
Yeah.
Going back to the Brador caller.
Yeah.
Beer is, the fresher you can get it, the better it's going to be. The longer it sits, the quicker the hop flavors in particular break down. And especially when you see unrefrigerated beer, you should be a little wary.
Yeah.
Because beer needs to be taken care of.
Now, Roger, home brewers.
Fresh.
Yeah, but also can be very bad. I mean, back in 25 or more years ago, I had friends who gave it a shot, and it was cidery, it was fizzy, it was bad. So
cidery, it depends on how you made it. There's a lot of stuff that indicates.
I didn't make it.
Well, yeah.
I barely drank it.
I mean, you in general.
Yeah.
Could indicate that you're using, well, back in the old days, what a lot of people made what they called a kit and a kilo. It was a pre-hopped kit, and you'd put sugar in it to get the alcohol. The sugar the cane sugar tends to give it a cidery taste.
Yeah.
Blah. Actually, I have some actual real cider from a local cidery opening up, which is good in a cider, but you don't want it in a beer.
I see.
The industry has changed a lot, and there is a lot of really cool, it's just better product available.
Right, but education, especially for the home brewer, it's vital. Okay, 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Earlier this morning, Joe Donahue and I were joking, riffing, if you will, about Bob Hope walk-ons. And lo and behold, who walks
that
in the studio but our own Bob Hope, Joe Donahue. What do you think, Joe?
Very nice. I don't know what I'm drinking, but it's.
This is the Goza that I mentioned before. So it's a style from Leipzig, Germany. It's made sour by bacteria that produce lactic acid.
Bacteria.
Yeah. Oh, this is great. This is really great. Yeah,
it's also got coriander in it and enough salt that it boosts the round, sweet flavor of the malt, but doesn't cross the line into tasting salty.
Okay.
And so that balances the sourness a little bit. It's a wheat beer, so it's got a little bit of a wheat flavor in there.
So salt is okay to put in a German beer and still call it German beer?
Well, the coriander wouldn't be either. So, no, this beer never passed the
Rheinheitsgebot. Right.
Okay, so we'll go back to the phones. Joe, can you stick around a little while? Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Terry in Allenville. Terry, you're on.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I was just wondering if it seems like the trend now, or maybe it's just what I'm seeing on the beer outlet shelves, for a lot of pale ale, a lot of different versions of pale ale, and on the flip side, a lot of lagers that tend to have that similar piney character. That pale ale seems the only way I can describe it. It's a pine.
Yeah, that's those, from the hops.
Yeah, those would be probably Cascade hops.
Yeah, is there anything on the market available that's closer in style to a cleaner beer, more of a German style that's being made in the United States right now?
There's a lot of different beers out there. I mean, right now, India Pale Ales seem to be king.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they're all hoppier than the next one. But there are some really good beers out there that are not as strong, not quite as hoppy on the bitter side. The other beers that you could look for would be European-style lagers, like you mentioned. Like we did a Dunkelweizen, which is actually a dark wheat. Mm-hmm. And that is not too strong, but it's got a nice dark flavor to it. George had the Oktoberfest, which is really tasty. So there's lots of variety.
And you know,
English style milds and bitters, like Andrew had mentioned before that we tried, are going to be more malt flavored rather malt oriented than hop oriented. So those
My preferences lean toward like a Newcastle.
Right. So look for English style stuff.
The brown ales, if you like Newcastle, all the brown ales work really well.
Yeah. Try old engine oil.
Is it
old engine oil or old motor oil? I forget which one it is.
I don't know.
It's either old engine oil or old motor oil. It's a great dark beer. Okay. The label says viscous. I mean, it's really, really malty and a lot of chocolatey notes to it. So.
All right, Terry, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it very much. Yeah, hops are king right now, and I love the bitter
beers.
But
there's alternatives.
But there are. There's one of the things for home brewers to work on, I think, is the balance between malt and hops.
Right.
That balance can be tricky. You can make a beer that's fairly malty that has a lot of hops in it, but the two of them balance each other out.
Well, Andrew, that was a brilliant seg, as we say in the business, because George in Scotia has a question about just that. Hi, George, you're on.
Mm-hmm. Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I'm a home brewer, and I grew my own hops this summer, and I picked them, I dried them. I'm used to using the pelletized hops that come in the kits.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, I think you have to use more of the dry hops than the pelletized. And I was wondering what the ratio is. Say a beer is calling for, at 60 minutes, 1 ounce of the pelletized. How much of the dry hops should I use?
Well, the if they're the hops that you grew, it's going to be really hard to tell at first. Yeah. Typically, homegrown hops are not as strong as the commercial varieties.
Why? Just because of generation after generation of breeding?
We probably don't get as much sun here.
It's completely dependent on the
sun and soil
on the
variety.
Kind of hop you grew. Right.
Right.
If you grew Crystal or Holler Tower, there's hardly any bittering power. If you've got Cascade, that could be up to 9% alpha acid if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And depending on how the year was, it's best to not use your own hops for bittering because you're going to have a really hard time figuring out how bitter the beer is going to be. You can use your own hops for the aroma additions where the bitterness doesn't matter.
Gotcha.
And then, you'll just use as many ounces of dry hops as you would of pellets.
I'd err on the side of more of your dry hops than less. And the pellets seem to keep a lot better. They have their alpha acids stay better than the whole leaf hops do.
Yeah,
so you're going to get more out of the pellets.
Okay.
Yeah. I froze them, but after I dried them. I put them in those.
Right, and yours are fresh because you grew them and you froze them, and so they're going to be in good shape. But I would recommend, you know, stick with commercial pellets that you know the bittering potential of for making the bitter addition, and then use yours for aroma.
Have you used whole hops in your homebrew system before?
This is the first time.
Don't try not to clog everything up.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Sounds like the voice of experience there.
Also, in general, if you're getting the whole hops from wherever your homebrew store is, then you would basically use the same amount of pellets or whole hops, assuming that they have the same alpha.
Okay.
It's one for one.
All right. Thank you,
great.
George.
Thank you.
Good luck. And, you know, getting to your comment, George, why can't he just go for it? I mean, he's not looking for anything specific. Why can't he just go ahead?
Oh, he can, but if he is looking for something specific, he's likely to be disappointed.
Right.
But he
might get lucky, and it might be phenomenal.
But, well, you can experiment. If you have enough, you can make a batch.
Right.
That'll give you an idea how bitter it is, and then you can tweak it the next time. That's generally what you do.
But for most homebrewers, I mean, especially if you're doing all grain like we do, it takes all day to brew it,
yeah,
and then a couple of weeks to ferment and age it.
And then you can taste
then,
it. Yeah, yeah.
And then you taste it. So if it's not good after 2 weeks of work, well, that's kind of a drag.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, no, I'd rather not experiment that way.
All right. All right. You're very button-topped, you know? It's you're very conservative.
Yeah.
All right, here's one from the email. Bill says, hi, Ray and guests. That's you. I'm a fan of IPAs. Recently, I tried a couple brands of Imperial IPA and one Black IPA. Mm. What makes an IPA Imperial or Black? Also, we'll do this one first, although we've touched on it, and then we'll do the second part. So, what makes an IPA Imperial?
What's the alcohol percentage, George?
Oh, I don't remember off the top of my head.
It's just 8%
somewhere.
It's what people call anything they make strong people are calling Imperial. Because
anything probably over 7% would be Imperial.
Barley wine-ish type.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And then a Black IPA is pretty obvious. It's dark.
And we talked about that earlier.
It's a dark beer with a lot of
hops, dark. Very, very hoppy.
All right. The second part of Bill's question. Also, a craft brewery, in Utah is called Uinta, U-I-N-T-A. Any idea how that name is pronounced? Well, thanks for making me say it before we know how it's pronounced. Thanks. Love the show. Anybody? U-I-N-T-A.
I don't know, but I had it just last week for the first time. I had one of their pale ales, and it was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's out of Utah. We'll just say Uinta.
Yes, I think so.
Uinta.
Yeah, that sounds right.
1-800-348-2551. It's Kelly in Albany. Kelly, you're on the Beer Show.
Hi. I was just wondering what would be a good place to start for a home brewer. I did homebrewing years ago when Roger had just one store and haven't done it really since then, so I was looking to get started again.
Well, now you have any one of five of Roger's stores to choose from.
That's right.
I know.
Well, you probably still have the same equipment, right? I mean, you've probably saved your equipment, no doubt.
I have moved many times since then, so I don't have any of it.
Well, basically, it's just an equipment kit, and choose what kind of beer you want to make. And if you did, you try it when you bought your kit. you did make it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so all you need is more equipment and ingredients, and the ingredients are better than ever. There's a lot more variety. The hobby has really grown a lot. And you'll be surprised at how much more stuff there is available and how much just more fun you can have.
All right. Kelly,
thank you.
Thank you. That was Roger Savoy of Homebrew Emporium in Rensselaer, Cambridge, West Boylston, South Weymouth, and soon New Rochelle. Also joined today by Andrew Mankin of the Barrington Brewery in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and
Thanks,
George DePiro of Druthers in Saratoga Springs. And Druthers is a big part of this Fusion event, right?
Oh, yes, next Friday.
What's the deal?
You're asking me? I'm just going to go there and pour a beer.
Okay. Well, it's supposedly a big arts
and
food
it's a big
craft and
arts and arts
fashion
fundraiser. Yeah, and I know I'll be bringing a bunch of beer down and pouring that. So,
all right, fair enough.
That's next Friday night.
Rising stars of the culinary world will be there as well. So Katie told me to mention that. Now I've done it. All right, what have we got here?
This is a Dunkelweizen.
Okay, this is from
Barrington
Brewery.
Yep.
Okay.
So this is a dark wheat beer. And it has, it's made with Bavarian wheat yeast, so it gives it kind of a nice citrusy, slightly, just a touch of sour flavor. It's fairly smooth. Most wheat beers are very light, light in color also. This is a dark one, so it has a little bit of a chocolatey flavor to it.
And lightly hopped, too.
Yes, lightly hopped. Yeah, you know, I like to balance out my hops and malt. I don't, for a beer like this, it's on the dark side. I don't want the hops to overpower the malt.
It has a classic taste, indeed. Yes. All right, our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, handed this to me. It says, the pronunciation of Yointa is actually Uintah. Uintah. It's named after the mountains in Utah. Uintah.
Huh. Okay.
Fine. All right, let's take a break. Zach Malloy, 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Back with more of your calls after this.
Support comes from Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, a classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts. AshokanCenter.org. Cafe Capriccio, offering private catering for groups of 10 to 40 and escorted tours to Tuscany, locations in Albany and Saratoga Springs. CafeCapriccio.com for reservations. And Bow Wow Bathhouse Resorts and Daycare, South Deerfield, Massachusetts. For over 7 years, providing 10 hours of daily indoor-outdoor play, professional grooming, and retail shop. TheBowWowBathhouse.com.
One 800-348-2551 is the number on Vox Pop. George Shapiro, Roger Savoy, and Andrew Mencken are here. I'm Ray Graff. It's the Beer Show. We do it once in a blue moon, and we've been sampling some beers here. We just had a Dunkelweizen. Is that what we had?
Yes.
Very nice. Very authentic tasting from Barrington Brewery. Roger Savoy has handed us something. What is it, Roger?
Now, this actually is fall-related. It's not beer. This is a cider. One of our friends and customers is Alejandro, and he and his father are starting a cidery. It's going to be on Broadway in Albany, and this is one of their ciders, Nine Pin Cider Works.
Cider has taken off.
Cider, there's a. I was talking with the Indian farm people today. Indian Ladder Farms, and they're starting a farm brewery. There was another cidery that we were talking with. So there's at least a couple of them planned for the area. And Alejandro, they already got their license and ready to go in a couple of months.
The licensing the same as one would for a micro
beer brewery? It's similar,
and
they still have to go through the TTB, but fortunately they've already got their stuff. Now, this is slightly carbonated and off dry, which means it has a little bit of sugar, so you get the flavor of the apples in there. And
this reminds me an awful lot of the beer my friends tried to brew 25 years ago.
Well, as a cider, this is what you want.
Okay, but as a beer, not so much.
As a beer, not so much, yeah. You know. And, you know, cider used to be what everybody drank in New England. That was the drink of every man.
Sure.
You know, a mug in the morning. John Adams drank a mug every morning.
That's Joe's philosophy as well.
A mug in the morning.
Yeah. Why is it so light as opposed to cider? Compared to cider.
You're going to have different apples that will give you different colors and stuff like that. But also a lot of this is, it's not that much.
It's cleared up, so probably most of the sediments and little bits of apple pieces have settled out.
Exactly.
Because this is taken longer for it to make this than fresh cider.
Right.
So if you had fresh cider, it would get clean like this at some
point. Yeah, it will sit if it doesn't spontaneously ferment right off the bat.
Let's go back to the phones. Dan in Clifton Park, you're on. Hi, Dan.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is about expiration dates. Would you buy a beer that has no expiration date or no date that it was born or no way to find out how old that beer is? I'm drinking a lager now that I like quite a bit. There's nothing, it's about half the price of Sam Adams, but there's nothing on the can or the package to tell me the age, how old that beer is. So I guess my question is, should I buy one?
No.
I like it.
No? Who said no?
I'm lucky.
Well, if you like it. Yeah, I mean, if you like it, then it's fine. I mean, you could probably ask the store owner, and they might know when they got it in, at least. Typically, if it's imported, it's going to be a little bit older. But if there's nothing on it, it's really hard to tell. There's no requirement to say born on. Not at all.
I see. But you could contact them and tell them that you would like to have that, and maybe they'll change in their policy. I mean, a lot of people would do that. Get enough people to tell them.
I thought about doing that, but there's no phone number either around the can.
Well, that must be good stuff. I'll tell you what. A couple of X's on the label, and that's it.
The internet could probably yield contact information if you put in the brewery's name.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and I could Google it.
All right. Use the Google. Yeah.
That's good.
Ganz genau.
Dan, thanks a lot for the call. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. George DePiro is here. Roger Savoy, Andrew Mencken, and our celebrity guest taster, Joe Donahue, has made an appearance, a walk-on. Let's go to Paul in Pittsfield. Paul.
Oh, my gosh. Thanks for having these guys on the show. What a treat.
Mm-hmm.
I got to say, you put the emphasis in the wrong syllable there, Ray. It's Uinta.
Uinta. All right, fine.
Uinta. Here's my question. We got a local beer called a Farmhouse Ale out of Sheffield. And it's, from my understanding of beer, it's not a farmhouse ale because it's not a Saison Brettanomyces sort of funk flavor.
The what now?
And I'm wondering why it's called a farmhouse ale, and it's technically an American farmhouse that I would assume is kind of like a Saison style, if it has to have that funk Brettanomyces flavor.
Okay, I'm confused.
You're getting into
esoteric
splitting
territory.
Hairs.
Yeah, well, there's a difference between what a brewery might call their beer and what beer style it is. So if they've got a brewery that somewhat vaguely resembles a farmhouse and it's in the middle of nowhere, well, they're making farmhouse beer now, aren't they? Regardless of what style it might fit into if they were to enter it into a contest. So a great example of breweries giving beers confusing names and thereby clouding the issue would be Hefeweizen being applied to American-style wheat beers. Widmer has a beer called Hefeweizen.
Yeah.
It's not a German wheat beer. It won't have any of the yeast-derived spiciness or fruitiness in Andy's beer here because it's made using a neutral ale strain. But they called it Hefeweizen. So you might buy it thinking, okay, I'm going to get a banana and clove experience. And you get home, and it's like, this tastes really boring. What's wrong? Well, because it's an American-style wheat beer, but they called it by the German name.
So they can call it what they want.
They can call it whatever they want. Right?
So what is a farmhouse style? A classical
farmhouse
style?
Comes out of France, northern France mostly. And it's a higher alcohol beer that sometimes is spontaneously fermented. And it has a slight sour flavor sometimes.
Okay.
Can have a phenolic-y flavor a little bit. It's usually fairly light in color. Mm.
Right.
So it's not a heavy dark beer to drink, but it's got a decent alcohol punch to it.
All right, Paul, have we satisfied your curiosity?
A bit. I guess it's disappointing that Americans wouldn't be a little more committed to naming and branding. But it's delicious. That's the good news.
Well, it's one of the things that I find is try not to get too hung up on names when it comes to beer. So like pale ales just have a huge spectrum that could be considered a pale ale. And people get a little hung up on the terminology. And it's really about the quality of the beer and the beer flavors that's important.
It's important, I think, for brewers to give their beers proper names. I do that because, you know, if you went into a restaurant and ordered a steak and they handed you a hamburger, you'd be pretty disappointed and justifiably so. So what's the difference if you ask somebody, you know, if you give them a beer that's called Hefeweizen, but it's insipid, boring American wheat beer that tastes only marginally stronger than Coors? So
not that Coors are bad.
It's not
we ran
bad,
this by the legal department. Coors is just fine,
it's
everyone.
It's just it's not full flavored. Right. And American style wheat beers tend to not be full flavored either.
Yeah.
So you're not getting what you thought you were buying.
Okay. Well, Paul, thanks a lot.
Squeeze in one more question?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Thanks, guys. Again, I love that you guys have these guys on the show. So if I'm making a ton of Belgian styles myself, I find myself trying to get the beer off the yeast as quick as possible once the gravity has stopped moving. But I have had the last two batches have tasted like Band-Aids. My buddies tell me
you
it's because...
Band-Aids?
Band-Aids. My buddies tell me it's because I'm not taking it off the yeast fast enough, but I'm taking it off like immediately.
No, that's not it. The Band-Aid character comes from a class of compounds called phenols. Phenols are made by lots of Belgian yeast. So it could be the yeast strains you're using and how you're treating them is accentuating the phenols. The other thing is if the beer is attenuating too far, that would also show that you've got wild yeast contamination. So if you're sure your sanitation is really good and it's not wild yeast, it's just the yeast strains you're choosing and how you're treating them. So you might want to try some different yeasts.
Yeah. And don't eat too many Band-Aids.
Awesome advice.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. All right, 1-800-348-2551.
That is a valid term.
Right. How does one say it is a Band-Aid taste?
You know it when you smell it. When you smell it, you'll say, wow, that really smells like plastic.
A beer judge is trained, and that's one of the tastes that when you take a beer judge class, which George is a master judge and teaches.
All right.
So you would actually, so that when you are talking about the flavors of beers, everyone has the same language, so that when we taste it, we know exactly what it means.
Okay.
So that's actually one of the descriptors, and because it tastes like a Band-Aid.
The beer I just poured actually has some phenolic character to it. It's made using a Belgian yeast.
Okay.
It's a stout. It's got malted rye in it, and like I said, a Belgian yeast, and it's got a strong cocoa character, but it also does have a little bit of a spicy phenolic note. Doesn't go as far into Band-Aid. Band-Aid's not pleasant, so you don't want a yeast to produce those flavors. But lots of other phenols are pleasant. Clove is primarily, that aroma is caused by 4-vinyl guaiacol, which is a phenol. And other spices have lots of phenols in them, but so do plastics and electrical fires. Those also have phenols in them. So you got to avoid certain compounds.
Yeah, we avoid electrical fires. And
yeah, that's a good point. So when you mention a cocoa essence or a note, there's no cocoa involved.
Not in this beer, but you can put cocoa in a beer. I've done it before. But
where does it come from?
A lot of the yeast.
It's from in this beer, it's mostly from the darker malts, but how it's also interacting with what the yeast did.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there's chocolate malt, which is a really nice malt to use, but it doesn't have chocolate in it. It's just roasted to a certain color, and they call it chocolate malt.
All right, that explains it. Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Don in Red Hook. Don, you're on.
Well, hello. I'm on my way to the Adirondacks to go canoe camping, and I left some cans of Founders All Day IPA behind because I didn't have room and because somebody told me it stays fresher longer in cans. Back on the freshness topic, I'm wondering if that's true or not.
I don't think so. Bottles stay just as fresh as cans.
Even with light contamination?
It's if they're in a brown bottle, they should be just as it
brown,
goes a little quicker, but
a can will never skunk from light.
Right.
Because the light can't get through the aluminum.
But from a freshness standpoint, the quicker you can keep it refrigerated and the longer you can keep it refrigerated, the better the flavor will last.
Okay. Oxygen is really bad for beer, and if you have bad packaging equipment of any kind, oxygen is going to get into the package. That's the brewer's fault, and lots of small breweries have bad packaging equipment because good packaging equipment is outrageously expensive. So cans notoriously have bad seals around them because the seamer that the brewery is using is not good. That would let oxygen in. The beer can go bad. Bottles, the crown caps can have a problem also. So, like Andy just said, drink it fresh, keep it cold.
All
that's
right.
The way to do it.
Don, thanks a lot for the call. I tell you, one of my all-time favorite beers is to have around the house, Dale's Pale. Comes in cans. It's just a great beer to have. Never you know, skunks out. It's just a very nice beer. 1-800-348-2551. Catherine, you're on.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for this discussion. I was just calling because I've got a question about the pumpkin craze that's sweeping the nation this fall and in the last couple of falls. I was wondering, are there breweries out there that are actually brewing with pumpkin, or is this just a reliance on nutmeg and cinnamon?
You'd have to ask every individual brewer. I'm sure somebody's out there not using pumpkin, and I know lots of people do use pumpkin. But you're right. The spices are what people taste and think of pumpkin.
Yeah, pumpkin doesn't have a tremendous amount of flavor by itself.
Right.
It's really about the really about the spices.
Yeah.
Do you do a pumpkin beer, George?
No,
we don't either.
I do an apple beer instead in the fall, and I would have brought it today, but we're between batches. The last batch is sold out. The next batch isn't quite ready.
Okay,
yet.
So when you say you make an apple beer or you make a pumpkin beer or something else, how do you infuse the actual fruit into that?
It's different with pumpkins and apples. With apples, they're very full of sugar, so I just go to Indian Ladder Farms, which Roger mentioned before, and I buy a whole bunch of apple cider from them, and then I pour it into the young beer after fermentation.
Okay, so young beer is after it's fermented?
Right, after it's fermented, but before it tastes ready to drink. And
how long does that take?
To that point?
From fermentation until it's ready to drink?
It's usually 2 weeks for an average beer.
So, George, are you pouring it in and then re-fermenting it, or are you stabilizing the beer?
No, that's what provides the carbonation. That secondary fermentation of the sugar from the apple cider is carbonating that beer.
Is that the same way they'll make a framboise, let's say? Where
sort of, but
that's
not at all.
That's you just asked a really it's a very complicated question what you just asked, so we won't go there.
All right, fair enough. Well, there are only three minutes left.
Lambics are hard, but with pumpkins, the problem with pumpkins is that they're starch. They're not so much sugar, so you've got to do something to convert their starch into sugar, or brewer's yeast can't eat it. So it has to be cut up in some way and thrown in with the mash, with the malt, which has enzymes that convert starch into sugar.
And as Andrew says, they really don't have much taste on their own. It's really the spices.
It's really about the cinnamon, the cloves,
squash,
the allspice.
Right.
I'm with you. I'm not a big fan of that in the beer. Let's go get another call or two in here. Ann, where are you calling from, Ann?
Yes, this is Anastasia Stammer. I'm calling from Otis.
Oh, hi. You're on.
Yeah, hi there. I'm actually also editor of Berkshire Magazine, and just want to let you know that in our October issue, we just published a beer and a local beer and hard cider trail. So you can see Barrington Brewery on there, and all the other places locally that you know you can discover the new brews and hard cider.
Some great stuff in Berkshire.
Yeah, there's we've got three breweries in Berkshire County now, and they're all good. They're all doing pretty well.
You, Wandering Star, and who else?
Big Elm.
Big Elm.
Yeah, it's been we've been the only brewery for a very long time, and in the last 2 years, those two have opened up.
And you welcome the competition?
We do. Yeah, I think there's
plenty of room.
There's so many new breweries opening up. You know, it always worries you as a business owner, but I think that overall, it's brought more people into the fold. It's brought more people to try microbrewery beer. Mm-hmm. So I think it's only going to be a good thing.
Do you feel competition? George, I'll throw you in. Do you feel real competition with the neighboring brewery and say, I got to outdo these guys?
I'm a brew pub, and I'm the only brew pub in Saratoga Springs. I guess I'm not the brew pub. I'm a person, aren't I?
Yes, you
are. But being the only brew pub in Saratoga Springs makes us special. We don't feel competitive. We're looking to open a second location that'll have a production
brewery.
But
in general, do you feel a competitive sense?
It is becoming more competitive.
Yeah, there's
not the chumminess that there was 15 years ago.
But it makes for better product.
We're a brew pub also, but we do sell our beer at some liquor stores and draft accounts at restaurants. Very small amount, just locally. And that part of it is very competitive, extremely competitive.
Very interesting.
But as far as when you guys get together, it's nobody's like, you know, having problems with, you know, the brewers like to talk to other brewers, you know, about what they're doing.
So it's not a Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan thing.
No.
Right.
No.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Well, that's good. And that's a happy note to end the program. And thanks a lot for the call. That'll do it for today's program. Last shot, George.
What?
You got anything to say?
Oh, we're supposed to be having a beer dinner on November 13th, and I promised I would say that. So there you go.
So a beer dinner, and you have a website, yes?
Druthersbrewing.com.
All right. And Andrew?
Come down to the brewery. We've got Oktoberfest beer on tap right now, and we're going to be doing a beer dinner with Chez Nous Restaurant up in Lenox.
Okay.
Sorry, Lee, which should be good.
Fantastic. And Roger Savoy?
Well, we're actually doing a project with George's old place, Albany Pump Station, on November 10th with their Albany XXL, check it out.
Okay, and Joe Donahue.
Bob Hope, isn't it Bob Hope?
Yeah, it's Bob Hope. You're no help at all. Support comes from the Henyon Bakery, Amherst, 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings, henyonbakery.com, and the Pride Center of the Capital Region, honoring the LGBT community Friday, October 18th at the Century House, capitalpridecenter.org. That's it for today. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Patrick Garrett answering the phones? Yes, Patrick Garrett did it. Thanks to our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. Thanks to you for listening. Tomorrow at this time, it's Moyers and Company. And then on Monday, something very special for the holiday, which I don't know what it is. Goodbye.